Well, they couldn't have ordered up a better day, I'll tell you that. Oh, I woke up, I was so glad. Everyone, it's me, Matt Rogers, and today is a very special day here on the HBO Max Movie Club. We're really bringing home the blue ribbon on this one because this episode is all about the films, the creative offerings, the comedy gold of Christopher Guest. And yes, there were some best in show quotes littered throughout those opening sentences of the podcast for my diehards. Okay, I see you, baby. Good boys and good girls and good NBs. That was a little dog joke, like talking to you guys as if you were dogs. Anyways, born February 5th, 1948 in New York City, Christopher Guest was raised in both New York and London and is actually, get this, royal-ish. Okay, he's a baron. He holds a hereditary British seat as the fifth Baron Haydon Guest. Major brag. So all that, and being known for pioneering the mockumentary genre, okay, king, Christopher Guest is truly one of a kind. But did you know he actually doesn't love the word mockumentary? Yeah, he believes it implies he's making fun of others. What a guy, right? He doesn't want to make fun of people, only satirize. There's a difference. If you don't think you know Christopher Guest, you do. I'm talking Best in Show, Waiting for Guffman, A Mighty Wind, For Your Consideration, and the list truly does go on and on. But, you know, currently, and you're not going to believe this, you actually can stream Best in Show, A Mighty Wind, and For Your Consideration all on HBO Max. So get your busy bee, get cozy, and get into it. You know, Guest loves working with his people. In fact, if you're a fan of his films, you'll notice that he sort of has a company of folks that he likes to work with again and again. A sort of improv troupe of sorts in a world where we still use the phrase improv troupe. Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara, Fred Willard, Michael McKean, Bob Balaban, Parker Posey, Harry Shearer, Jennifer Coolidge, Larry Miller, John Michael Higgins, and Jane Lynch. All these folks appear in at least four of Guest's films. And he actually is a frequent writing partner of Eugene Levy's. They've actually written five films together. Okay, prolific much? Yeah. In addition to being a filmmaker and actor, Christopher Guest is an accomplished musician. He studied classical music and plays the clarinet and the mandolin, as well as the guitar, and he actually played in bluegrass and rock bands. So music was and remains an interest, so much so that he actually co-wrote the score and original music for A Mighty Wind and Waiting for Guffman. In fact, he's actually a Grammy winner for A Mighty Wind, in addition to being an Emmy winner for his work on the Lily Tomlin special way back in the 70s. And, I mean, he's just overall one of the most influential comedic artists, I'm going to say it, ever. Also, did we know that he's married to Jamie Lee Curtis and has been for 38 years? I don't know how I missed this. But, yeah, married to JLC for nearly four decades. That's power. And I also feel like it has to be a record for Hollywood, right? Now get this. Jamie actually pursued Christopher. Here's a cute story. She saw his picture in a magazine with her Halloween producer, and she said, I'm going to marry that man. She got his number from her agent. She calls him. He never calls back. A while later, she sees him at a restaurant. He waves. She waves. As he's walking out, he waves goodbye to her again. The next day, he calls her back, finally. And the rest is history. So I guess this is sort of a lesson to all men. Call back the first time, you flops. He could have met his wife even earlier. Jesus, it's Jamie Lee Curtis. You're going to keep her waiting? Imagine this podcast all of a sudden turned against Christopher Guest for this tiny little mistake he made that he rectified almost immediately and has led to a very happy marriage for almost four decades. Could be. Could happen. I'm very unpredictable as a host. They have two adopted daughters named Annie, born in 1986, and Ruby, born in 1996. So I guess it all worked out in the end. But when Jamie Lee Curtis calls you straight men out there, call her back. Not that you can now. She's married to Christopher Guest, the pioneer of the mockumentary genre, even though he doesn't like that term. Listen, everyone, I actually have, you know, breaking news, a perfect guest for this episode. You know her, you love her. She's my friend, Greta Teitelman. She was here on this podcast with me last season for the film Reminiscence, if you want to reminisce about that one. And you probably know her work on HBO Max, sorry about it, in the fifth season of Search Party and on Losa Spookies, which is coming back soon for a second season. We'll talk to her a bit about that. But yeah, let's get into it, huh? With my guest, Greta Titelman. Now, the reason I brought my guest in here is because I know she can name every nut. And she is one of my nutty girls. So, Greta, first off, right off the top, go ahead and name every nut.
Pine nut, which is also a town. peanut. Red pistachio nut. All natural white pistachio nut.
Very good.
Macadamia nut. And you know, my mom would get so upset when I would say macadamia nut.
She would say, Harlan Pepper, if you don't stop naming nuts.
You stop naming nuts.
Red pine nut. This is, I think, my favorite film.
I think it's my favorite film, too. And I'm not being hyperbolic here when I say this. Like,
best in show, that is.
It is best in show, truly. And I mean this sincerely. Was one of those things when I saw it, even when I was young, mm-hmm. I was like, I want to be a comedian. Like, I want to do that dumb shit.
Yeah. I remember when it entered my life, my sixth grade teacher came into school one day and was like, everyone has to go home and watch Best in Show. Which now, knowing that I was in sixth grade, it feels like maybe a little mature.
Yeah.
To tell your sixth graders to go home and watch. But also, you need those things that come in and sort of challenge you at a young age.
You do. I mean, my mom, both of my parents were obsessed with this movie. And it was one of those movies that I hold very dear to me because my mom loved watching it. And she would let me watch it, even though, but we didn't understand.
No.
I didn't understand the nuance that was going on with Cookie Fleck, you know?
No, I don't think I did. I think I understood that the game was that she was a big hoe, but I think I only thought it was funny. But I think that honestly for me, it's a shockingly queer movie. You watch it again and there's two queer couples in this and just the pageantry. It's such a gay movie. And honestly, a ton of Christopher Guest's work is there's implicit queerness in it.
Yeah. I have a question. How did you feel the aging of the gay couple was in this movie?
Do you mean in terms of straight people playing them?
Yes, yes.
Well, I don't think I explicitly know that either of them are not queer. And also, it's Jane Lynch is obviously a lesbian playing a lesbian role. So I don't know. I'm different about this, though. I'm not someone that's queer roles must be capital M played by queer people. I think if you're really right for the part and you're going to act the experience really well, I'm actually down for whoever to play whatever. That's not including racial stuff, by the way. I'm talking explicitly about human sexuality is such a spectrum that if you can accurately portray the experience, I'm down for it. And I think in terms of this movie, they're hilarious. And they are that gaudy gay couple. And I just think it's so lived in, and they clearly have such affection for each other and the material. And they're not I don't feel as a gay man that I'm being, you know, placed into some caricature by this movie. I just think they're funny characters, you know?
No, they're so funny. When they're hanging up the quilt on the wall to be at the hotel for
and
one
he's
night.
Lighting incense and doing that little dance with his little fingers,
Yes. But John Michael Higgins, I think, is so good.
He's so
when
funny.
When he's talking about how it took him 6 months to make his leather pants.
Yeah.
When he's red thread and leather. And I'm just that's this guy.
Also, just when they're checking into the hotel, something that has stayed with me forever is when they're when he goes, well, how will you be paying? And then John Michael Higgins goes, talk to daddy.
Yeah.
I do that all the time now at restaurants, at hotel check-ins. Talk to daddy.
Oh, also when they're in the butcher shop and John Michael Higgins you got a pepperoni stick back there? I just want to hold it.
I just want to hold it. And then Michael McKean the whole time is just dealing with him okay, all right. Yeah. Just so clearly obsessed with him, but also dismissive of him. Okay, yeah, all right. He's, you let him go, he'll just go. It's honestly, all the relationships are perfect in this movie. Just like, everyone's just so on the same page. It's like all breathing the same air artistically. And it's just, I wonder if you have like a favorite duo.
I mean, I love Fred Willard.
Yeah.
When Fred Willard is just going off as a judge, and I don't know, I'm going to look up the guy who was judging with him. His name is Jim Piddock, who was a very funny straight man. When you see him, he's trying so hard to not break when Fred Willard is just going on. And when he has that part where he's like, well, why don't they get on props? A little Sherlock Holmes hat with a little pipe. What if the pipe gets
smoke?
And
he won even without the pipe and the smoke. And then when he goes, you know, it would be good to do a calendar. You know, girls, you know, washing cars. And they get all soaped up, tight t-shirts. I mean, I don't know. You could figure it out. That's more your thing. But it could be great and make a buck.
Call it doggy style.
Call it doggy style. Well, I don't know. You come up with the name. I don't really, you know, it's not my thing.
I think Fred Willard is amazing. Of course, Parker Posey is just giving us 110%. We actually need to talk about Parker Posey, I think, right now for about 5 minutes.
Go on.
She's just perfect. She's just so, and I feel this way about Parker Posey across the board in every Parker Posey performance.
Yeah,
she is so lived in as this person. And like, that's a character that I think could really get taken way too far, way too overboard, where you could be watching it and be like, this doesn't feel real. When she's freaking out in the hotel room, searching for the busy bee, and then goes to the pet store
next to the hotel.
Sequence is like, this is this person. I know this person, even though this person is being deranged. This person exists. And I think that is the pure genius of all Christopher Guest work and the pure genius of Parker Posey.
It's just, that scene is also so funny too, because the guy that she's doing the scene with is just like, genuinely trying to help her. And he's like, well, what I think the dog is responding to is the stripes. Well, you obviously don't know my dog.
Yeah. Also, that's, you know,
I'll just take this and go. And then he goes, this is the least like what you're describing. This is a parrot.
This is a fish.
This is a fish. Brilliant. And also, I mean, I think the centerpiece of the whole movie and what I love the most is the scene where Franklin and Meg Swan are describing how they met at two different Starbucks across the street.
Oh, yeah, it's perfect.
Their connection over the L.L. Bean catalogs and the line, we are so blessed to have been raised amongst catalogs.
Also, the opening scene.
Yeah. When
in the dog therapy office talking about doing Kama Sutra. It's like, it's so good. Everyone is so perfect.
It's brilliant. Also, like, you know, genuinely, like, Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, like, there is just some magic there. Like, and you know what's funny? It's like, they make it look so easy, like, this, like, crackerjack comedy chemistry they have. But then, like, there are such broad things about their performances, too. Like, when she hurts her knee and the way that she's walking when she comes out at the end.
Abe and I were literally just talking about this. The way that she walks out at the end, that wobble, that like, it's so good. Their chemistry is truly so, 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 so special and has stood the test of time, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you a Schitt's Creek fan?
You know, I've dabbled in Schitt's Creek. I know that eventually I am going to sit down and watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
Whenever I see clips, though, I'm like, oh, yeah, she's again, perfect. I know that I've been using that word constantly. But another thing that I love is when Catherine O'Hara, when they stop over at the friend's house for dinner.
Oh, yeah.
And he takes the Norwich Terrier out of her hands and then just kisses her on the lips.
Yeah.
And it's like, just,
Yeah, it's so funny to watch people discover them like as of recently, when meanwhile they've been doing this type of high caliber work for such a long time. I mean, it's one of those like comedic duos that I think like obviously has gotten the credit as of late, but going back, like, you ever seen A Mighty Wind?
Oh yeah. It's incredible.
That's one that's a little bit more like offbeat, and like it's not as quotable as Best in Show or Waiting for Guffman. Like, it's not like, you know, but again, it's their relationship in it is so specific and lived in that, and like they are such a center in it. And I'll never forget when they performed their song on the Oscars. Do you remember when they performed on the Oscars together?
Yes, I do.
That little kiss.
I don't know. I wonder, like, to me, that's a very older school thing to like have your comedic partner and like the concept of a comedy duo. I feel like now we are so focused on the individual that like we downplay the power of true comedic duos and ensemble. And, you know, I think that like we're trending, I hope that we're trending back to more of like ensemble work and seeing the power of like being in a group and how you feed off of each other and energetically work off of each other, because that really is something that like they can only exist within each other. They can't do it. I mean, they of course are so brilliant without each other, but when they're together, it's like a whole other character is created.
Yeah, well, obviously, like, the character that rides solo the most in this movie is Harlan Pepper, played by Christopher Guest. And that he gave us the iconic Nuts monologue. But also, like, little tossaway lines that I wonder were improvised. Like, when he's leaving, he wasn't even Christopher Guest that said this, but when Christopher Guest is leaving as Harlan Pepper to go to the Mayflower dog kennel, and the guy goes, "If you get tired, pull over. You get hungry, eat something."
Yeah.
Just little things like that. Will Sasso,
who has also been in, to me, two of the funniest movies ever made, being Best in Show and, of course, Drop Dead Gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Will Sasso, and he's like, "Don't forget the tape." The tape of funny songs. The tape of funny songs.
The tape of funny songs.
What were they? We don't know.
Yeah. Drop Dead Gorgeous. Like, you watch it again nowadays and you're like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. But also, parts of it are questionable in terms of how they hold up. I mean, we just talked to Matt Malloy, because Matt Malloy is on the Showtime show with me. I love that for you.
Yes.
And we were talking to him. He obviously plays like the pedophile judge in the movie. And he was like, yeah, the most I get come up to and spoken about is that movie. I think there's something about a mockumentary, too, that like we're able to catch things from actors that we just ordinarily wouldn't. And also, you imagine that they can just sit there and go and go and go and go. So you do get the best stuff. So it feels like the mockumentary as a genre, it almost feels like, I hope it doesn't feel like played out to people, because I never want to stop seeing it. We've seen it a lot on television too, like in The Office and Parks and Rec, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I love it. It works.
I love it so much. I think that the problem is we've had so many excellent mockumentaries that I think it's hard to compete. Like, I love Spinal Tap.
It's coming back.
It is coming back. It is coming back. I'm so curious. But I think that that movie, I also think that that is one of Christopher Guest's other peak acting moment.
Yes.
But that movie, I think, had to have been so eye-opening, because that was the real, to me, like the first real Christopher Guest, fully mockumentary style of just like following these people to follow them, you know? Yeah.
I feel like maybe more people don't do it because it feels like it does belong to Christopher Guest in a way. And then it also feels like it does belong to, like, you know, Greg Daniels, Mike Schur, like people that did The Office and, you know, those that were behind Parks and Rec. Like, it feels like it's something that masters have already done in a way. And so you can't touch it, because God forbid you were to make something that didn't like stack up.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think they are few and far between. And I think that it's so hard to compete with like the masters of the form is right. all I'm going to say about that, honey.
Just to sort of propel us into my next topic, I have a segment here on the HBO Max Movie Club called But How Is It a Queer Narrative? You may remember it well.
Mm-hmm. So, I do.
Matt, if you can play my techno beat, I'm going to talk about how this is a queer narrative. Here we go. Nuts. Promiscuity. Same-sex relationships between consenting adults. Doms, subs, toys, Jane Lynch, Jennifer Coolidge, Parker Posey, Catherine O'Hara, two different Starbucks across the street. Okay, thank you, Matt. Now, what we have here, and I'm happy, I had to name all the actresses in this film because truly, you have four true queer icons.
Yes.
Obviously, Parker Posey is going to be someone for all time in the queer community. We have Catherine O'Hara, who has created, I think, such indelible characters that one of the hot takes that someone sent in for this podcast was that on Drag Race, there should be a night of 1,000 Catherine O'Haras, and I honestly think that would be incredible. So that's how you know she's a queer icon. Obviously, Jennifer Coolidge having a well-earned moment right now after a, you know, what is now decades of incredible work. And I feel the queer community is close to her. And obviously, Jane Lynch, icon, Sue Sylvester, the house down, actual lesbian goddess, game show host, which is very queer. We're given too much in this movie in terms of queer icons, I would say.
I think Jennifer Coolidge right now is wearing the crown for gay icon. And
I mean, White Lotus
so well deserved.
Streaming on HBO.
Because her work, and I think what makes her work queer is it's subtle, but pointed.
Yeah.
She hardly speaks in this movie because her face is just giving 110%. It's telling you what she is saying, and that is power.
Yeah. She's also giving Jane Lynch a lot of room because you get the sense that like she as an improviser and as a scene partner like knows that Jane's strength is in like the content of what she's saying, and Jennifer is like an incredible, whether it's yes anding or like just like filling in the rest of the environment, she just sits there and listens and listens and listens and is then, you know, because she knows she's doing so much by just sitting there and being, and also in the way that they're dressed together, just like their like duet that they're doing in this movie is so good. And you're right, like Jennifer Coolidge, her power is rarely in what she says, but in just the way that she is existing. Like you think about like even Legally Blonde, you know, her scene partner is Reese Witherspoon, who is running the table, you know, like in White Lotus, she's really just like one of the reasons the character is so like mysterious and why we can't really get a gauge on what the fuck her deal is, because she's not saying that much. She's sort of just like on vacation by herself, and she manages to run away with the whole series just by being Jennifer Coolidge. And then when she does sort of give up what's going on in her interior life, it's surprising because we literally haven't heard from her that much, despite the fact that she's been there.
It's really amazing. I mean, the part when they're investing show and she's describing the makeup look that she gave to Jane Lynch and that Jane took it off. And she was like, it's a Cleopatra eye.
I did a really, a Sophia Loren Persian eye, and it was very dramatic. Persian eye. And then Jane Lynch goes, I looked freakish.
I love the hair, though.
I do love the hair. And then when, oh my God, when John Michael Higgins and Michael McKean are watching Christy Cummings as played by Jane Lynch on television, and they're like, oh my God, it's Miss Cummings.
Yeah.
Rhapsody has two mommies. Oh, she's going to talk to Sherry. Look at that. Just like their little narrating. It's just...
It's
so good.
It's very funny. It's so good.
If you were a drag queen and you had to do a night of 1,000 Catherine O'Haras on Drag Race, what is your Catherine O'Hara look that you're bringing to the runway? Let's take it outside of Cookie Fleck because we're talking so much Best in Show. Though Cookie Fleck literally does sort of naturally lend itself to walking a runway because of the dog showing of it all. And there is that iconic hairpiece that she wears. That like curly headpiece.
I think that if I were to choose one, it would probably be her character from Waiting for Guffman. Because the sweatsuit that she wears with Fred Willard when they're like getting ready to audition and they're doing their exercises, that is an iconic look. I will pull it up for you if you can't think of it.
I can recall it. I would say while you're pulling it up, I would say that I would have to choose Beetlejuice. I mean, her at the dinner with her like sort of asymmetrical
hairdo.
Then, of course, there is a performance you could do in the mom searching for her child in Home Alone. You know what I mean?
Well, I think what makes Catherine O'Hara's look so iconic in Waiting for Guffman is the bang. It is the flipped up crazy bang. You could have a lot of fun. You know, if I were a queen, you could have a lot of fun with this bang. That is such a choice.
Yeah, it really is so bizarre. Like, and you have to imagine, like, especially in these movies, like in these Christopher Guest movies that are, you know, they do exist in a grounded world, even though the characters are big. Like when they do make big choices with the costuming, you have to think that's all a really delicate conversation about how do we make sure that we're not going too far, but this is like a heightened world that people can recognize, but also like still feel like they're an alien group of people, you know what I mean?
Yes. It's really amazing. I mean, Catherine O'Hara has had such an incredible career where she's been able to do so much, and the fact that she's also so consistent. Yeah, like her characters are across the board so consistent. And actually, that's kind of what I'll say about all of these people minus Christopher Guest. I kind of feel like Christopher Guest is really the one that gets to play kooky different characters all the time. Everyone else is kind of just like in their clip, like in their little zone, kind of playing the same version of this person that we just can't get enough of.
Yeah, you couldn't tell me. Because I think obviously, because I was told as a sixth grader by my teacher, this film, Best in Show, was my first Christopher Guest film. And then I hadn't seen another one until years later. So I thought that him as Harlan Pepper was probably close to what he was like in real life, which is not the case. And I actually would go probably as far as to say that Harlan Pepper is the biggest character in the movie because of how far he is away from actual Christopher Guest state of being. Like, just the accent, the whole thing.
Harlan Pepper.
And the name Harlan Pepper.
Also, low-key having him be a ventriloquist, having the doll. Like, that only comes in for one scene. And it's like, when the doll's eyes kind of close, it's like, are you tired?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That is such a weird detail. Yeah, there are those, again, that's like, it feels like also like every character has that one insane detail, like Eugene having two left feet. Like that. And I'm so happy that they bring that in so early in the movie too, is because you're like, okay, now I understand the world we're playing in. Like, this man has two left feet, literally. It's such a swing.
But what's so brilliant about it is it doesn't get brought up again until he's with Winky, like in the...
Yeah,
dog
the stakes.
Show.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's because it's not overdone. Like, that's the thing. It's not like every time they're seeing a new person, they're like, oh, you got two left feet. It's only noticed again when he is in the dog show competition
and
as
Fred
the handler.
Fred Willard is like pointing it out. He's like, no, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's something wrong with his feet. And then you remember this man has had to overcome so much in order to be able to do this.
Yeah. Fred Willard really, to me, I think, do not sleep on Fred Willard in this movie.
Rest
he is
in peace.
So, so funny. Randomly, he's like, a little off topic, but how much do you think I can bench?
Yeah.
He's like,
and I can deadlift 350.
I can deadlift 500, he said.
500. Yeah, Jesus. Oh my
God. It's so funny. Do you think that future generations are going to come upon Christopher Guest as like we came upon like Mel Brooks or something like that? Do you think that there's going to be?
Well, I think that like what something I'm realizing as of today is that, I mean, our dear friend Jared Frieder, like who I think this movie is spiritually made exactly for, hasn't seen this. And that makes me feel like who else out there hasn't seen these Christopher Guest movies? And then I remember like, you know, there haven't been that many as of late. Like, and I also think, you know, have you seen For Your Consideration?
Of course. I think I've seen pretty much every single one of Christopher Guest's movies.
So For Your Consideration is the first like fully scripted one that he did. And I think it's been a bit since we've seen like an actual like full on mockumentary effort from him. And maybe if he were to do one again that were to say, I don't know, stream exclusively on HBO Max, people could find him because that, well, and another thing too is like this cast is probably busy as fuck. Like this was a time when all of these people were very much around and now they're all booking. Like even like, I can't think of any of them that don't book. Like it's very cool to see this ensemble that clearly were all there just like for the love of the game. Like, you know, at this time, they all went on to such like busy careers.
Yeah, huge careers. I mean, to me, that brings me a lot of peace because some days when I have like, you know, I think that we forget that in comedy, we do have a lot of career longevity that like we are so lucky to have these like great communities of creators and people that want to bring you up with them and work with you and collaborate with you. Yeah. And it is like, holy shit, these people are, you know, probably working the most they've ever worked in their careers right now, which I think is incredible to see.
So I think if I have one gripe with the movie, it's actually it doesn't have to do really with the movie itself. It has to do with a plot point, which is the winner of the Mayflower Classic. Now, we know that the Terrier wins, so Eugene and Catherine take it with Winky. But HBO Max did a poll, a movie club hot take for this podcast. They said, did the best dog win? Now, Greta, do you think that the viewing audience feels the best dog won?
I'm going to say that the viewing audience says no.
68% says yes. 48% says no. Hubert was robbed. So they wanted to see the Bloodhound win. I kind of thought that the Bloodhound might win or like, because and honestly, me as a child watching this movie, I was like, really the Terrier won? And now me as an adult too. I don't think a Terrier wins many dog shows like this.
I will say Winky was a gorgeous Norwich Terrier. I love Norwich Terriers. And if I would be God Loves a Terrier, I would be Cookie making that record because I do think God Loves a Terrier. Of course, Rhapsody in White couldn't win again. We knew that, you know.
There's sort of villainous in the movie when you watch it again. Like, Jane comes over and tries to intimidate Christopher Guest in that one scene. Like, I'm Christy Cummings. I handle Rhapsody in White. But I'm sure you know
But you
that.
Probably know that. He goes, I do and I don't.
I do and I don't. And the way she's like hitting his dog, like petting it hard.
Yeah. I think that like in the alt, I guess it would be maybe a dog that we didn't follow could win perhaps.
Ooh, that's an interesting take.
But I kind of felt like if I were to had to pick between the dogs we were following, the winner would have had to have been the Shih Tzu or Winky. To me, those were the only two options. I think that Harlan Pepper's dog winning would have been too much. It would have felt too much.
Like nepotism from himself, the director?
Yeah, kind of, you know.
I'm really curious to see what a script for this movie looks like, honestly. Like, is it a bunch of... Because it actually was nominated for a WGA award for Best Original Screenplay. And I'm thinking to myself, what is this actual screenplay look like? Like, do they submit it like to something like the WGA after it's improvised and they write it out? Or is it just like,
probably.
I wonder if it's like the actors get outlines of scenes and where they should go and then they just sort of improvise, which is sort of, I think, what makes sense to me when I'm watching it.
Yeah, I feel like every scene is kind of broken down in like a beat sheet because you need to like track story throughout. Like you can't lose it. But I think that when they submit like a script for an award, it needs to be transcribed after the fact. Like, I don't think that, because they were, I do feel like 80% of that movie was improvised.
Yeah. In terms of the dialogue, yes.
Yes. Yes. In terms of the dialogue. Like, I believe that that whole entire scene about the catalogs and J. Crew and L.L. Bean between Parker Posey and her husband, I think that that whole scene was improvised, personally. Do you agree?
I would agree. I mean, I think like maybe they're even given suggestions of jokes and maybe they do it like five or six times and then they do it again and like they defined areas that they want to explore. But that's what makes sense to me. But then again, I have been blown away in the past by improvisers before. I mean, when I first moved to New York and I was going to UCB all the time and like seeking out improv, I was always like completely floored by people that are like actual top-notch A-plus improvisers, the way that they are able to remember detail and track story during improv sets. So in a film like this where it's like an even more controlled atmosphere, I would not put it past geniuses like this to be making up jokes that are this hard on the spot. I mean, like, I've seen it happen.
I also feel like that brilliant scene we get with Jennifer Coolidge and her dying husband when she's talking about soup, the snap peas and soup and talking and not talking.
We could talk or not talk forever and still find things to not talk about.
To me, that feels like absolutely brilliant Jennifer Coolidge improv.
Yeah. And then also her scene with Jane Lynch and, you know, my mother, she didn't, where was it, like her father was the taskmaster. And that, you know, that worked for my family, you know, until my mom shot herself in 81. And Jennifer Coolidge just hopping in and saying like, and I have decorative abilities.
It's so good. Oh my God. And we can't overlook the hotel manager.
Oh, he's terrific.
When he's like, we have
that's
a rock band staying.
Catherine O'Hara. No, that's a good card. That's a good one.
We don't have to pay it until 2. But when he's like, when he's talking about the rock group, he's like, we had a rock group staying in here. I'm not going to say who. We laid down the plastic sheets. Apparently, they didn't know there was a bathroom in the room. And I'll still never get over the fact that they cooked a goat and it took forever to get the scent of charcoal and cumin out of the drapes. I was like, to deliver that line so sincerely and like so dropped in is so hard.
Oh my God. I mean, it's just one of those, and this is what I would say to, like, I don't know, like, just shouting it out into the void to people making things now. We want to be able to quote your movie. I think that's what, that's what makes movies and television shows like really stick in the, you know, zeitgeist or stay in the hearts and minds of people that like love comedy. It's like, we want to be able to quote it with each other. Like, you can't remember necessarily like, I don't know, like, we're not talking about the emotional moves of this movie or the beats. You know, we're talking about, like, the things that happened, the things that were said. I don't know, just, like, I feel like being able to quote movies with your friends is, like, such a formative, fun thing. Like, here we are having the time of our absolute life just quoting.
I know, we could truly just replay the movie and have a ball. But I think that that's the power of these big ensemble comedies that, like, I really hope are going to come back. I really hope that they come back because it's the power of, like, quotable Christopher Guest movies. It's the power of all of the Will Ferrell movies that everyone loves to quote. It's the power of all of the Ben Stiller movies that everyone loves to quote. It's like, you know, everyone loves a good quote, honey.
Everyone loves a good quote. And here's a quote from me to our listening audience out there. Greta Titelman is coming to HBO Max. What can we look forward to at U.S. Ambassador Melanie Gibbons getting up to in this new season of Los Espookies?
Well, you know, I gotta say that here I am talking about great ensemble comedies. And voila, wouldn't you know, I'm not just in one, but I'm in 2 on HBO Max.
Oh, okay, honey, let's give a special shout out to Search
Party. But Los Espookies season 2, it's truly some of the funniest writing I've ever read. I have an absolute ball. Melanie Gibbons is up to her little tricks. You know, she has some dreams. She has some goals.
We're going to see her in some looks.
She's, you know, bossing her staff around at the embassy. And it's just, I really do. I'm so excited that we got a second season and that we finished a second season and that everyone's going to get to watch it because it's so, so, so brilliant.
Long awaited. And of course, Search Party season 5, Greta was in the final season of Search Party, which I think it was the strongest season. And you can stream that one on HBO Max. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like working with that and Charles and SV and co in the cast of Search Party?
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, my goodness. I'm so lucky to just get to work with all of our like brilliant, brilliant friends. Obviously, Charles and SV are genius and I'm just going to say it. Visionaries. What do you think
there
about
you go.
That?
I think
ahead
accurate.
Of their time.
I think you hit it on the head.
And you really can't ask for better people like Alia, John, Meredith, John. You know, the four of them are just, it's that really good alchemy that we were talking about that like can exist and you want to be with it. And it was just so fun to work with them. And it was really fun to be British, honestly. It was fun. It was fun for me to slip into that little accent, give you some accent work. London Hughes told me that it was one of the top 5 best British accents she's ever heard from an American.
And her first name is London. So there you go.
Sorry. London from London. About it.
And then, of course, I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that, of course, Search Party is like a love letter to New York comedians. I mean, it's like, it's truly, if you watch season 1 through 5, you'll see so many people, and it is like an ensemble 50 times the size of the one we see in Best in Show, but spiritually sort of reminiscent.
Everyone is on it. It's insane.
And that's our own little reminiscence right there, Greta. Greta Titelman, thank you so much for joining us on the HBO Max Movie Club. You are my favorite little movie buddy.
Oh, Matt, I love you so much. And you know what? God loves a terrier, honey.
God loves a terrier. Yes, I did take the Catherine O'Hara harmony, even though I'm with Greta here. I did.
That makes sense because I'm more of a Eugene gal.
You're sort of the baritone here, and I'm the soprano. Love a terrier. All right, everyone. See you in a couple weeks.
Bye.
Woo. Thanks for joining the HBO Max Movie Club. The movies we talked about today are currently available on HBO Max. Check the show notes for exact streaming dates. And don't forget to join the club every other week. Share your hot takes for The Birdcage with hashtag MaxMovieClub to @HBOMaxMovies on Twitter and Instagram. If you haven't already subscribed, rated, or reviewed HBO Max Movie Club, please do so on the iHeartRadio app, HBO Max, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you might get your podcasts. HBO Max Movie Club is a production of HBO Max and iHeartRadio, hosted by me, Matt Rogers. Our executive producer is Matt Stillo. Our producer is Sierra Kaiser. And today's episode was written and researched by Kate Voss. Thanks, everybody.